You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLachlan. Jay McLachlan is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLachlan and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLachlan stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLachlan's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLachlan's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern, and the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLachlan, and so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLachlan is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20, capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital ZIBBY20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLachlan. Thanks so much. Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. And speaking of books, I have two of my own books coming out this spring and summer. Princess Charming is a picture book, which debuts on April 19th, and Bookends, a memoir of love, loss, and literature, comes out on July 1st, and it is truly a labor of love. I hope you'll pre-order, order, and join me on tour as I go across the country. You can find out more at zibbyowens.com or bookendsmemoir.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at zibbyowens because I always post about everything. Enjoy the show. Anna Petoniak is the author of Our American Friend, a novel. She's also the author of Necessary People, The Futures, and of course now Our American Friend. Before becoming a full-time author, she worked in book publishing, including as a senior editor at Random House. Anna grew up in Whistler, British Columbia. She graduated from Yale and lives in New York City. Welcome, Anna. Thank you so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss Our American Friend.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
It's my pleasure. Okay, so please tell listeners what your book is about.
Sure. So this is the story of an unlikely relationship between a journalist named Sophie Morse, who was once a White House reporter, attempted to leave the field of writing about politics, but was beckoned back in by an offer from a mysterious first lady named Laura Kane, who was born and raised in Soviet Russia and later moved to Paris, and then later yet moved to America and married the notoriously brash future president Henry Kane. First Lady Laura Kane asks Sophie to write her biography and to finally tell the world everything that Laura has kept secret up until then. So Sophie begins writing this story, and the secrets that come out in the process of writing it have the potential to reshape the world they both live in.
Love it. It was also so neat how the project, how Sophie ended up getting picked for the project, that mm-hmm. she basically asked such a good question. And as somebody who asks questions all day, I was like, yay, go her for asking.
Yeah.
So she asked like this very insightful question about the first lady's dad and his involvement in Paris and everything while they were in Paris. And I guess she remembered the question for so long that she was beckoned to do the writing herself.
Yeah. No, I think I do think it's very telling. When someone asks a question that proves they've really been paying attention and really been listening, it opens up this kind of trust between a subject and a writer, which is exactly what happens with Laura and Sophie. And I felt the same way. I'm so glad that Sophie had an active role to play in Laura's selection of her as her biographer. It wasn't just Laura picking her out of a crowd for no good reason. There Right. was that, there was that explanation behind it.
So interesting. I also loved the Upper East Side references in the book, mm-hmm. which are very close by. So
it was the first book I wrote after I had left my job at Random House and was a full-time writer working from home, you know, spending a lot more time in the neighborhood than I had when I was schlepping into Midtown every day. And I've always loved this neighborhood. I've sort of fallen in love with it over the years, but writing this book was really a reflection of how much time I was spending there and observing all these little details and all the neighborhood spots. So that was a really fun part of the writing process for me.
Did you also have a front door and put on a Christmas tree?
I did not, but there was a sort of interesting little side note to that is there's a real townhouse on East 70th Street, which was right near where I was living at the time. I've now moved all the way to 68th Street, so very far, that has a sort of interesting history behind it. This woman who wrote a memoir that I read as part of my research, she herself grew up in that townhouse, the daughter of Russian parents, and had described this very sort of Russian inflection to this particular building. I walked past it every day and I couldn't help but think, oh, maybe this is where my characters could live. So I sort of picked out the front door that would have the Christmas wreath on it, even though I didn't live there, and was able to almost pretend like it was a real place for these characters as I walked past it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to go walk on 70th and try to figure out.
Yeah, what. I'll tell you which one it is.
Okay. Tell me later. Tell me, like, put it in the chat or something. That's funny. And you even have like the upstairs neighbor who was immersed in Russian everything and
exactly.
how the two of them and how he said, like, when she talked about going back, how he said, no, like, I'm done. I'm never going back. And she's like, but you're still so in it. I mean, his whole apartment was covered in Russian things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading thinking like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this book is coming out in the context of what's going on in the news right now. Like, it's insane what's happening. So
it is.
I mean, how do you feel? I mean, you must have done so much research for this book. Tell me about that and how you're sort of making sense
processing
of the world now.
All of this.
Yeah.
I know. I did a lot of research. As I mentioned, it was the first book I wrote as a full-time writer, as opposed to someone splitting their time between a day job and an early morning job. And because I had that time on my hands, it allowed me to just dive so much more deeply into the research process than I did for my first two books. I've always been fascinated by Russia for reasons that I'm not quite sure why. I've always loved Russian literature. I think that was sort of my entry point into being interested in the history and the culture. So I spent a lot of time just absorbing as much as I could, especially about the Cold War, about the KGB, the KGB versus the CIA, and what it was like to grow up during that time. And I don't know that it's given me any special insight into the horrible situation that we're in today. I do feel this sort of conflict, which is that I can't stand Putin, can't stand what he's doing. And I do think it's very important to, like, clearly state that Russia is the aggressor and Ukraine is being attacked and annihilated in this awful way. But I think a lot of ordinary Russian men and women probably don't support this war and can't abide it at all. So I feel this real conflict, which I think people probably felt at other points in the past, which is that you can love the culture and appreciate the culture and have this interest in it, but also find it completely repellent what's happening today. So I do think that one thing I picked up on in my research, which certainly seems to be true these days, is I read a couple of biographies about Putin, because there's a Putin-esque Russian president who makes an appearance in this book. And in reading about him, it became very clear that he just carried this humiliation with him ever since the end of the Cold War, because he was a KGB officer who had this very ignominious end to his time at the KGB. And I think it's clear to everyone today that he's acting out of this place of just totally irrational anger and humiliation that makes him a very scary person to be reckoned with.
Wow. It's like dealing with a child, really.
Exactly. About, you know. It's like a toddler, you could explain to a toddler that throwing this fit isn't going to get him or her the toy they want, but they're not going to listen. They're going to throw the fit because something in them is causing them to throw a fit.
Well, like the Putin character, I mean, the American president and wife share some commonalities with the former president too. Did you write this like right as Trump was elected, or when were you, was this in the aftermath of that, or what happened?
So I first got the idea back in 2016, but it wasn't for a few years that I began writing it. So I read a profile in, I think it was GQ magazine, in the spring of 2016. So Trump was still just a candidate at that point. He hadn't been elected. And the profile was really focused on Melania Trump and how little was known about her. But this article was attempting to expose some of those things from the past. And one detail really stuck out to me in the article, which was that growing up in Yugoslavia during the Cold War, it was a time when most people in that situation really didn't have much in the way of money or material comfort. But Melania's father was a member of the Communist Party, quite well connected, had this relatively comfortable job that gave him quite a good living. So she grew up with this kind of privilege and material comfort that was a byproduct of her believing in communism, or of her family believing in communism. Then you flash forward all these decades later, and she's married to the president of the United States, who's sort of the ultimate capitalist in the ultimate capitalist society. And I kept finding myself wondering what it would be like to make that journey from one ideological extreme to the other, and had something happened along the way to change her mind. Now, there was no way I was going to find this out about the real Melania, because she's such a closed book and nothing's known about her. And maybe nothing did happen along the way. Maybe she's simply an opportunist. But I was really interested in those possibilities. I couldn't stop thinking about that kind of question, which is usually a sign that maybe you're onto something and this might be area to explore for your next novel. So it wasn't until the fall of 2018, about 2 years later, that I began writing Our American Friend. And I was very certain at the outset that I didn't want to write about the real Melania or the real Donald Trump. Partially, again, because so little is known about the real Melania that it wouldn't make much sense to base a story on the real person. And also because I couldn't stand the idea of spending all that time with these people who I found so obnoxious and repellent. So it was a good way of taking a seed of inspiration from reality, but writing very much my own version of it and letting my characters evolve organically, have their own journeys, have their own paths. And I think it was also helpful to have this world to escape into during that time that was so chaotic and challenging for so many people. This was a way of engaging with some of the moral questions posed by our era without driving myself crazy watching 12 hours of MSNBC or CNN every day.
Oh my gosh. Wow. So wait, can we go back and tell me about how, like,
your job in publishing. I want to know about mm-hmm. you becoming an editor at Random House, your other books. Like, when did this start? How far back did you start writing? Was history, like, what was your main interest at school? And we both went to mm-hmm. Yale, right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Awesome.
When did you graduate? Can I ask?
Of course, I graduated in 2010. Oh, I was an English major and also an editor at the Yale Daily News, which is sort of that's the extent of my experience with journalism. I've had a few people ask about that, given that the character of Sophie is a reporter. I've always loved journalists and admire them so greatly, and sort of got to work briefly as a journalist at the college paper, but I loved it. And I think that it gives you such a great license as a novelist when you make one of your characters a reporter. It's their job to go out and ask questions. So that's kind of irresistible. But in any case, yes, when I graduated from college, I started working in publishing. My very first job was as a subsidiary rights assistant at Penguin, and then later moved over to become an editorial assistant at Random House, where I worked for just about 8 years, gradually moving up and building my own list and becoming an editor in my own right. And I think it was in the spring of 2011, so about a year after graduating from college, that I began to feel the itch to do something creative that only belonged to me, that was something that I didn't necessarily get paid for or have that sort of obligation that you have with a regular job. I was also really fascinated and somewhat perplexed by that whole post-college experience of moving to New York, of choosing one path and watching your friends choose another path, of suddenly being aware of these great differences that college had a way of covering up and kept you from seeing. It was also not long after the recession. I had a lot of friends working in finance, which was sort of getting its footing back, but obviously had just gone through this huge shock. And those various factors are what planted the seeds of what became The Futures, my first novel, which I loved writing that book because it was really a way for me to process some of the observations and thoughts and feelings that I was having in those post-college years, but without writing about myself, because not a lot was happening to me. I was just going to work every day and doing my normal thing. And when I started writing the book, I wasn't sure what it would turn into. I didn't have the great grand goal of becoming a published novelist because I had no idea if it would be any good. And I worked on it for about 3 years in little dribs and drabs in the morning before going to work, before eventually having, a finished draft that I shared with my husband and with my sister, and then eventually, went out and found an agent and a publisher.
Wow. You make it sound easy.
Yeah, I know. And right now I'm like, oh, that was nothing. But it was, almost 10, it's a little over 10 years ago now that I first started writing the book. And the amount of intimidation and frankly, just terror I felt mm-hmm. when I opened that blank Word document for the first time. Oh my God. I'm just very grateful to my former self for having started it, because I think starting is always the hardest part.
Yes. Depends, though. Sometimes
depends. Yeah, there's a lot of hard parts.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids
won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it. And that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
And then what about your second book?
So my second book, Necessary People, I also wrote while at Random House. And that was a very fun book to write, very different from The Futures, and was certainly a reflection of a different period of life when I found myself thinking a lot about ambition and how people define themselves in terms of their jobs and, you know, moving up in various hierarchies. And Necessary People takes place in the world of television news. It's about two best friends, Stella and Violet, who have always had this complicated sort of frenemy-like relationship. When Violet gets a job as a TV producer, she feels like she's finally found a way to stand apart from Stella. But then Stella swoops in and becomes an on-camera star whose shadow quickly eclipses Violet's, as it always has. And it's the story of them competing with each other and bringing out both the best and the worst in each other. And that was really a fun book to write, because I do think that ambition is a theme that we all encounter, especially in a place like New York City. And there's a lot of good to it, but there's a lot of bad to it too. And Necessary People is very much a story about that.
Wow. Okay. So now you have our American friend. Mm-hmm. What have you learned from, like, that? I hate that sounds like a canned question, but now that this is your third launch, like, what are you going to take away, even from a book publicity standpoint or marketing or, like, with all of your experience and as an editor, like, what works for you? What doesn't work for you? Like, what are you excited about? What are you not excited about?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the thing I appreciated the most the third time around as compared to the first two publications was the importance of only trying to control what I can actually control and to not sweat too much the things that are completely out of my hands. Every time I talk to writer friends, I say that the best piece of advice I can give just from a sanity perspective is do not check your Amazon reviews. Do not read your Goodreads reviews, because there may be some great ones out there, but there's going to be a lot of negative ones too, no matter how great the book is. And that's a good way to drive yourself crazy. I think it's helpful too to remember why you wrote the book in the first place, which is that it's a story that you're excited about and that you want to share with the world. That is a really important thing to come back to when the sort of ups and downs of the publicity and marketing process hit. But also, if you can really figure out what your book is about and what it means to you, it'll help you ideally speak about it in a more authentic way when you're doing podcasts or other interviews, or when you're sharing your own material on social media or doing a marketing campaign. So in terms of, like, real specific brass tacks, I used to be much better at this, because when I worked in publishing, I had the chance to see all these great campaigns at Random House and what was working for those books. It's amazing how much can change in 3 years, which is about how long it's been since I left Random House. All the specific buttons we wanted to push back then, now it's a whole new set of things. So I think it's just sort of staying curious and flexible about what's actually going to help, you know, get eyeballs on your book and move the needle on it. But one thing I've gotten better at, which I was not as good at on my first two books, is asking, you know, friends and people in my life to sort of help me along the way. I think it's easy as a writer to feel very shy. And I think a lot of writers are sort of shy and introverted by nature, but you have to put that extrovert hat on when it comes time to talking about your book. And you probably have plenty of friends and family and people in your community who love you and they love the book and they're excited about it. So you just ask them to get that word of mouth going for you. Because I really do think the word of mouth is just the most powerful thing in the world.
You're absolutely right. I feel like that too. And I also, the thing of you have to see it enough times. You know,
yes.
You have to see it, or someone has to mention it, or you have to be like, okay, you know.
Yeah.
I
think that's exactly right. I think it's maybe a little bit less about that one big mega publicity hit that's going to change your mind. Although those certainly exist still. But if you've seen it mentioned in, you know, three different places on a friend's Instagram feed and in a roundup online and on a podcast, then you're probably thinking, okay, there's clearly something to this book. Maybe I should give it a shot.
Yes, agree. And what do you like to read? Like, what are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? I was just wandering through the bookstore yesterday because I feel a little bit like I'm emerging from this daze of having been talking about myself and my book for so long and I didn't have a strong gut instinct of what I wanted to read next, which I sometimes do. But I was wandering through the bookstore yesterday and just sort of scanning my eye across the shelves to see what jumped out at me. And the book I wound up picking up, I can't believe I've never read this, is A Fine Balance by Rohinton Mistry, which came out, I want to say, in 1995. One of those books that I've always heard is magnificent, but never picked up. And I think with everything going on in the news right now and the sort of chaos of the world, I just have this desire to escape into something completely different. And I started reading it last night and already am loving it so much. And I'm so glad it's a 600-page novel because it's exactly the kind of thing I just want to escape into for a while.
Wow.
So
I have not read it, and probably because it's 600 pages. Yeah,
it's very long.
Yeah. No,
but it's one of those books where I think if you fall in love with a really good book at the beginning and it's really long, that's a good thing. That can be such a good feeling.
There are definitely many books I wish didn't end because I love them so much.
Exactly. But in general, I think that kind of sweeping saga, especially family sagas where you're following all these different threads, you know, the grandmother and the mother and the children and the interlocking fortunes over the course of various years. I love books like that. I just find them so juicy and appealing.
Yeah, those are great. Would you ever go back to being an editor, even part-time or freelance? Or
I do occasionally a little bit of freelance editing, which is really nice because the thing I miss about the job at Random House is that sort of creative partnership that develops between an editor and a writer. You're really in the trenches together. You're talking about these characters and these dynamics as if they're real people. And that's such a rewarding and special kind of work. So every once in a while, I'll do a little bit of freelance editing, especially for a few writers who I used to work with at Random House, where we've continued working together a bit now. Don't think I'd want to go back in any full-time capacity just because a lot of your time is taken up with everything else, the project management, the coordination between various departments. There are so many moving pieces that come with publishing a book, and I've liked being able to be more selfish with my time and devote that time to writing as opposed to the sort of bureaucracy that comes with it.
Got it. Awesome. Okay. Well, I feel like you've already given so much advice. Any parting advice for aspiring authors?
Yeah, I think the best advice I can give is probably the simplest advice, which these writers have surely heard from many other people before, which is that the best thing you can do as a writer is just get your butt in the chair every day and develop a habit and a routine. I think that advice basically gets dressed up and spun in different ways, but if you can figure out what time of day works for you, whether it's a half hour or an hour carved out somewhere, and stick to it every single day, I'm a big believer in having that time set aside, even if you don't get a single word written, even if you're just sitting there rereading what you wrote yesterday, maybe tinkering with it around the edges. It's that practice and that formation of a habit that's really going to serve you well. So That's the best advice and the simplest advice I can give. And I think that if you really want to do it and you keep showing up day after day, it's going to happen eventually. There are no guarantees in terms of how it gets published or what happens with a book ultimately, but just by the act of showing up every day and writing, you are becoming a writer. So that's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. I love it. Anna, thank you so much. This was really fun. And it's so nice to know we're in the same neighborhood, and so we can get together in real life at some point or whatever, cross paths. And maybe we've already crossed paths and now we know.
Yeah, exactly. Now we know. Well, and thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here.
All right. Good luck with your heat and everything.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Talk soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. If you like this podcast, you will love my new anthology called Moms Don't Have Time to Have Kids. Check it out, and you'll hear from 49 authors about all sorts of things moms don't have time to do. All the authors have been on this podcast. Also, check out my TikTok, @withZibbyandTracy, my other podcast, Sex Talk with Zibby and Tracy. Check out Moms Don't Have Time to Write on Medium. And of course, my new publishing company called Zibby Books. And now back to our daily author interview site and a quick hello from some of my kids.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
Enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.